will say your name, George Floyd. Justice for George Floyd. Derek Chauvin, the verdict came back guilty on all three of the charges. And to say what a collective sigh of relief. I was desperate for Minnesota and for America for justice because we saw it with our own flippin' eyes.
Yeah.
How could there be any other thing but guilty? I mean, how much more out in the open does a black man's death have to be? And you know, I have been calming people down because I don't know why I wasn't skeptical. I felt in my heart, Julia, last week it was going to come back guilty. And I said, and Casey's like, you're just a wishful optimistic. Right. And I said, but how do you
rectify what you saw? Right. You kind of explained that with your eyes and everyone saw it and everyone knew it was wrong. And it's just this.
And his own peers, you know, that went on too long, that was not, you know, the way that things are done, blah, blah, you know, they, all of that. And I just thought, and I thought of George Floyd's little daughter. And I remember last year we played the audio. She and her mom were on GMA and she was like 6 years old. Mm-hmm. And Barbara Streisand had given her
a trip. Disney World.
And gave her stock.
Yes, she did.
Because she thinks.
She did.
And then she just said tearfully, well, my mama said my daddy changed the world. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean.
This is so.
The whole world was watching.
It's fun watching. So we're watching different feeds of what's happening in downtown Minneapolis, what's happening in George Floyd Square.
It's just joy.
And everybody.
Relief, even though, of course, even with the guilty verdict, you know, his family has lost. You know, but this is a precious person, but at least you've been seen. Maybe people are starting to see what the heavy need that black people and people of color have been living under.
Right.
The injustice, it's gone on and on 400 years.
This is so.
It's unbelievable. I feel so happy I could just burst out crying.
I do too. Yeah.
I really just because it
our
was
our phones
justice.
Have been lighting up from all of our families and friends, praying for Minnesota from around the country.
Rocco, did you hear from people? Like, did you have some friends from say Gadaber? What's going on over there?
Yeah, I mean, mostly beforehand.
Right.
Saying, hey, stay safe and are you guys all right? You know, because nobody knew what was going to happen. You know, we
Lori
live in
did.
The city.
I did.
I know.
Lori Chandra over here did.
I think people are so relieved.
Yeah. And it was, of course, only, you know, a white privileged Mona Chandra such as myself could have that belief because, you know, what else?
You don't know any differently.
I don't know any differently.
Right.
But I'm just thinking, I don't know. This just seems like I just had this feeling. Julia, that this is going to be what happened. And I think it was also, you know, I just, to think of anything else, I couldn't bring myself to think of it.
No. But this is just such great news. If you're just joining us,
family and
Derek Chauvin guilty on all three counts, all three charges against him. This is, they're putting under the George Floyd Square on a gas station sign, justice for George Floyd. Mm-hmm. And underneath it, they're putting up letters right now, just, I don't know how it's going to finish, but people, there's great. You know, if people want to be excited and watch with the live streams or watch it on the news, Channel 5 is carrying it and everyone else. I mean, it's just.
And we've seen time and time again where people get away with things, but we've never had anything be this blatant.
Yes.
The film, you know, that did change everything, you know. Yeah. So
we couldn't be happier for our community, for our friends.
What's the nobody ever thought the revolution would start in Minneapolis except Prince.
Of course, you know that song.
Yeah, you know that, right?
You know that song.
What's that from?
Well, I mean, it's just the fact that his band was called The Revolution.
Revolution,
right?
I know it. And, you know, I don't know. I think maybe just, I mean, of course it was going to end here. And it's been a long year because, you know, happened. It's almost been a year.
And on top of the COVID situation going, it's been a long year for everybody. But for, this can't be, they wrote justice served, I believe. I can't read the whole sign. But so anyway.
Yeah. I'm very, very happy.
I know it. We've got.
I just feel like a huge sigh of relief.
I know.
And I'm just.
know, we're just, we're kind of speechless, and it's kind of like a weird emotional. I kind of want to watch all the news coverage right now, honestly, to kind of hear what everyone's saying.
Yeah, and I can only imagine how, you know, people were like very, very worried that once again, this guy is going to get away with something, because officers have taken lives unjustly and all of this. I can see where, like, a lot of people are, he's not going to be found guilty,
and people are cheering and clapping. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, we just share joy with everybody here in the Twin Cities area and all of our listeners around the world, I guess.
Yeah,
so
I know.
This is just a big darn deal.
That's right, Julia. I always forget about all of our international.
I know, right?
People who enjoy our show.
Oh, justice served. Yeah. Oh, people. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we need to take another break right away, Rocco, to get in
we
some
can
things.
If you just want to catch your breath or whatever.
All right,
you know.
Well, we've got a great book coming up.
Oh, and it's so timely.
It is so timely.
Julia, you're the new Donnie Love in the booking books department.
Oh,
you're pretty good at it. And you're giving us a great selection of authors and stories.
We have really read.
But I mean, this book is about race.
It is in the South.
But I mean, race is everywhere. But it's an insight into a time,
in the 1920s.
In the 1920s, mm-hmm. It could be right now.
Yeah, but it's
but I mean, as far as like the same issues that we're dealing with, so it's just like kind of amazing that it happened to be today.
I would have thought
you would have gotten some kind of Willie Nelson memoir or something for today.
You're such a brat for 420.
For 420, you're such a Virgo planner.
What's going on with the 420 scene? I do have some 420.
Ago.
I know it. All right, so someone came up with some 420 sayings or something. It is 420, people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Boy, maybe some people will be experiencing that later.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Guilty, guilty, guilty. Puff, puff, pass.
I know.
Pass.
I know.
Let's just go to break, and then Rocco can...
Yeah.
We'll catch our breath.
Yeah.
We'll be right back. Thanks, everyone, for hanging out with us.
Get Kelly on the line.
All right, we'll be right back.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Lori and Julia Book Club today. It's just, I don't know, it's so unbelievably fitting that we have a book on today that's called The Girls in the Stilt House. Kelly Mustian, is that how you say your last name, Kelly?
Yes.
Is joining us, and it's your debut novel, and we're so giddy with relief that Derek Chauvin was found guilty on all three charges. You know, the justice of that, and then having your book, which is, you know, about race and justice and just this wonderful story about a time in America when a lot has changed and a lot hasn't changed. So it's just like, thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me so much. And what a momentous day. It's quite a day. I know we're all really emotional today.
Yes.
Yes, 100%, Kelly.
Yeah, and we really are. We really are.
And thank you, because we were going to talk to you an hour ago, and Kelly's on the East Coast, and you were nice enough to wait an hour for us.
Well, you were probably watching the news, too.
Oh, my goodness, I was. I was glued to it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really emotional. Like, I know the whole country is. I don't know how we had to move it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it is super emotional.
Well, it is, because I mean, I don't know. I just think that people have felt ashamed. I know white people have felt ashamed. I mean, Minnesota, we've been ashamed that this happened here. We were, you know, like, I mean, the injustices that have happened. It was like that for whatever reason, maybe because it was such a long video and we saw it with our eyes, but maybe is this the thing that's going to finally make people sit up and take notice? Really notice?
I hope so.
Mm-hmm.
I hope so. I know we've been disappointed before, but gosh, I really hope so. I hope this is a huge turning point.
Yeah,
it's a huge awakening.
Yeah, it really is. And your book,
The Girls in the Stilt House,
you know, this is just such a, you know, takes place in the South. And give us the setup of the story, because I just can't help but think the timing of your book is just karma. Because it's such a wonderful story.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me here and going through with this on a day like this. I so appreciate it. As for the book, the story opens in Mississippi in the 1920s. So that's Prohibition era, very racially charged setting. And we see two teenagers, Matilda and Ada. And when the book opens, they're about to hide a body way out in the woods in an old overgrown tomb with a cracked lid. Ada is the daughter of a trapper, a father that nobody would want. She grew up in a stilt house, hidden away on a bald cypress swamp. Matilda, from very different circumstances, daughter of sharecroppers from the other side of the Natchez Trace and from across the racial divide. And these two strangers are thrown together by a murder that happens and puts both of their lives in danger. So it's about secrets and, of course it's about a lot more than yes. I can say here.
You know, one of the things, first of all, you know, learning more about the Natchez Trace area, and I know that you grew up kind of in this area, that I felt like that was a character in this book, because you feel like you're walking through the swamps with these young women, and you feel like
you're so,
you know, where the ravine is and the valley is that this happens in, and over here behind the big tree. I mean, you really are an excellent writer, and I know that this is your debut novel, Kelly. It's a wonderful book.
Thank you so much. I just absolutely love hearing that. I'm kind of a sentence first writer, plot second, which is really not the way to sell a book. But the sentences, how they sound, the description, the melody of the sentences. I've said many times I could write I would love to write 80,000 words, a whole book on Daffodils Blowing in the Breeze. I would love that. I could do that. So I had to work hard to get, you know, the action and the plot. So I love that you like that the trace and the swamp seemed like a character in itself, because it definitely was to me.
Yeah, it really is. And I don't know how you got Karen Dion, who wrote The Marsh King's Daughter, which is a wonderful book.
And then book.
John Clinch, who wrote Marley, but you got book blurbs from them. And I'm like, we agree 100% with what they said about your book, because your two girls, Ada and Matilda, I mean, we feel for them. We cheer for them. I mean, my heart was breaking for Matilda and the racist crap that her family had to go through, you know, but how you paint, you know, that really gave us an empathy for the characters in a very deep way.
Well, that's wonderful. I really was hoping that would be the reaction to this book. I know that there will probably be different reactions to it. And so I'm really, really grateful to hear that. As far as the people who blurbed it, they are some of my favorite writers, people I absolutely respect. So it was such an honor for me for them to speak out, particularly about a book with a subject like this. It was a lot to ask of someone, and they were just fantastic, and they're all writers that are just heroes to me. It was, you know, there's an element in this book of bearing witness to what I knew to be true. I grew up in some very tumultuous years of the civil rights movement in Mississippi. Mm-hmm. I left at 19, but I understood that culture so well, having come of age there.
Mm-hmm.
Something about growing up somewhere, you're just permeated with that place. And there was an element of bearing witness, but I didn't want to overstep. I didn't want to cause any harm, add to all the years of harm that had been done.
Mm-hmm.
So it was something that I didn't come to lightly.
Interesting, you know, because Kelly and I talked about an hour ago, and you know, you were talking about when you originally wrote the book, because it's a young white girl, The Girls in the Stilt House.
Yeah,
it's about a young white girl and a young black mm-hmm. girl. And so you talked about that Matilda, who's a young black girl, had a much lesser role, but your publisher challenged you to have her have a bigger part in the story.
How did that come about, and what was the background on that?
Yeah, it wasn't my publisher, it was my agent.
Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry. Yes, I'm sorry.
Hang that on my publisher.
Okay.
But, I did write it differently in the beginning. I wrote Matilda from a wide distance, and she was a mystery until the very end and didn't speak until the last chapter. And it was my agent who loved Matilda and thought that she should have more equal billing with Ada, wanted to bring her forward. And honestly, it was a really hard decision for me, having come from Mississippi and witnessed so much displacement and oppression. I had to think a long time about it and how to do it and if I was going to do it. And he was right. My agent was right. It was the right thing to do. I think just having in a place that a town that I grew up in that was at least 50% Black, or at least is now, it was about that when I was there. Just to have minor characters in the background in a book in a place where race was everything seemed like a form of exclusion and discrimination itself.
Right.
So, like I said, it was tough, a tough road to navigate, but I hope I did it well. I hope that I did Matilda justice, and you know, I'm open to any response that anybody has. I'm listening.
Well, I've got one. I would like to know what happens to Matilda. I want another. I want more story because
she's such an interesting, young, vibrant woman,
and I love the voice of her and I don't know. She was really. I'm interested in the rest of the story because your book kind of ends in a satisfying way, but I was like, well, I wonder what's going to happen next after Matilda, you know.
In that first version, or one of the many versions of this book before I settled on where it is now, I had an epilogue at one point, so I know what happens to Matilda.
Are you going to tell us?
Spoil it for I can, but you know, part of the magic of a book is what the reader brings to it.
Right.
And I hate to force a future, I mean, Matilda's future on people when they may have their own ideas, you know?
Right. That's brilliant. We're just thinking about your next book.
Yeah, but maybe,
Kelly, we're giving you an
assignment.
But if you're just joining us, The Girls in the Stilt House, it is moving. It is a triumph. It is a deep look into race and
the friendship sturdiness and strength of a character sometimes to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And even though
they don't
it's going to pain all kinds of people. And I don't know.
It's a perfect book.
We really couldn't put this book down.
Oh, well, I love that. I love that you see them as strong characters. One of the things in my head, I've had a couple of comments about it. Most people love both of the characters and see them as strong, but I had a couple of comments about Ada seeming like a weak character. I know everybody likes the triumphal hero, you know, the feisty girl who overcomes everything. And Ada was, you know, she had a hard time in life. And I really wanted to speak, too, to people like Ada who are so beaten down by their circumstances and so emotionally stripped.
Right.
That even the tiniest of steps is enormous to someone like that. And I wanted to give honor to that. So I love that that you see them as strong women.
Oh, yeah. Kelly, you're so lovely.
Yeah, my goodness.
Oh, my gosh.
What is your job besides writing your first book?
You have family and you live in the foothills of North Carolina?
I live near the foothills, so
okay.
I don't want to tell. I know that was tricky terminology there, but I live very close to the foothills. But I spend so much time in them that I'm very connected to them. I actually live about 45 minutes from the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains, which is just the best place in the world. I have lived all over the country, and since I left Mississippi at 19. And the mountains of North Carolina are just the best. I've lived in 12 states, and I really love this place.
That's wonderful. Well, we are just, what a treat to meet you. And we always ask everyone, what's the last great book that you've read?
Yes, it's hard to pick one, and I haven't been able to read as much lately as I normally do, just for pleasure, just, you know, my to-read pile.
Yeah.
But I will mention a book that's not out quite yet. I got an early peek at this, but it's called Fox and I. It's like nothing I've ever read. It's an intimate memoir. It's a scientific nature book with some fantasy thrown in. It all in just beautiful writing, absolutely gorgeous writing.
Like FOX? Raven. Like FOX and I?
Yes, Fox and I, okay. Catherine Raven is the author.
Wonderful.
So that's my recommendation.
Well, we recommend everyone read The Girls in the Stilt House by Kelly Mustaine. You Mustian. We'll get it. And it was a delight.
I've heard it all.
And yeah, it was a treat for us to talk to you, and especially today on this
historic
really
day.
It's historic. Mm-hmm. And your book is something people should read. And so thank you for your time, Kelly. And we hope that your publisher gets in touch with us for your next book.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much, Roy and Julia. I have enjoyed this so much. You're both awesome.
Oh, thank you. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to get back to that thing we do here.
Hollywood right speak.
So, what are you trying to say?
Hollywood! Hollywood speaking!
What is the meaning of this?
All right, we were just talking about how wonderful
Kelly,
our author, was for The Girls in the Stilt House, and just what a historic day we're having here in Minnesota, and the timing to have her on.
The karmic magic of your booking, Julia, that this happened. I mean, you know, that we would have a book about the racial divide between two teenage girls and their lives, and
she was such an interesting author, talking about
how... And the story, how she tells it, and the whole... You know,
girls from the Stilt House people.
Yeah, Black people in America, the whole sharecropping system and all of the BS that went along with that kept people
that
oppressed.
That we didn't even, many people don't know about.
This is just a wonderful, wonderful
novel. It
really
is. And we don't have any to give away. Yeah, sorry, guys. I forgot to check my inbox on that part.
But I would read... To me, this book read like someone who's written a number of books.
Oh, 100%.
And also, if you're a book club person...
It comes with the questions.
It comes with the questions.
Which we always think is helpful.
And a conversation. So it gives you reading group guide and a conversation with the author. And I loved her character of Miss Tuttle. And just really, really... This book gave me some hope when I read it a couple weekends ago about everything. Mm-hmm. I just thought, okay, one story at a time, we can overcome all of this. So
it's The Girls in the Stilt House. Anyway, it was so fun to have her on our show and to hear.
She just seemed like she would be a college professor or something.
And just how important it was for her to get the voices right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's just smart. That was just fun.
Okay, Julia.
All right, so now what are we moving on to next? We're so giddy here. We are so happy for the verdict.
Don't you feel happy and relieved?
Don't you just feel relieved?
Relieved. And just also sad and...
Proud.
Yeah. And the person I'm thinking about a lot is Darnella Frazier, who took the video.
Yeah.
Without that. There's no case.
You're 100% correct.
She's 17 years old and sits there and films a man being murdered.
Yeah.
And the bravery of her. That was trending on Twitter right now too, Rocco. Mm-hmm. And thank you for bringing it up, because what a brave young woman. And she talked about her PTSD of having recorded that and everything that happened as a result of that.
And her 9-year-old cousin and the other guy and the
witnesses
woman,
right
the
there.
Witnesses,
that just would have been horrific. But anyway, you're right, Rocco. There's a lot of people to think about right now.
Yeah. It's just the sense of
relief.
And sadness and happiness. It is like this mixed bag of this. But it's been it feels like last summer was a long time ago in many, many ways. We were all George Floyd happened, and that was so
upsetting.
The
COVID scare that no one knew what was going on.
Yeah, people weren't being honest about it and all this. And then, you know, the presidential election. We were just like...
We've all been through
a year. Everyone's exhausted.
And, you know, in workplaces, you know, it's like...
Everyone's got two or three jobs.
But in... Boss, like, get in line, you know, because everyone's burnt out. Everybody is burnt out.
My,
I think
my therapist said for the first time she has a waiting list
really?
Because people are just in need of help. You know, yeah. I mean, there's just so much going on that we can't control.
Right.
And it's affecting our ability to function, but we're getting through it. We, you know, that's what we do at My Talk.
And this was a huge step, thank you for sharing that too.
Yeah. Because again, I do think the mental health of so many people has been so disrupted this past year that it's deep. It's just deep. Everything has
and
been deep.
And it doesn't just get better one thing or being in a new year.
And I remember
anything, it's just like, yeah.
And I want to thank the Minneapolis United Way because a woman, Donna, reached out to us right when the George Floyd thing was going down and I was crippled. I couldn't talk about race. I couldn't talk about what was going on. I really was. Laura, you were so good. And Donnie had just, you know, was no longer with us and we're in this transition phase and you were so strong. I just couldn't even have the conversations. And I think about how much further we all are in our conversations about color, about race in our world, and about different things that we didn't have these deep conversations about before.
It is something that if you're a white person native to Minnesota, people can't talk about race.
It was really hard for me.
There's a lot of just sort of, I don't know, I don't know. It's just, I don't know why that is. It's because you're around. Because
I didn't want to say the wrong thing. And I didn't want to, I was so afraid of not saying, you know.
But people are people.
I know. And I think that's the grace.
I remember I said, this was happening with a bunch of Woodbury mommy's kids, you guys would burn the strip malls down in a heartbeat.
But of course everyone would do this for their kids. Yeah.
But I'm just saying like that this has been going on and on and on and on and on. And it has felt hopeless in that way, you know?
Yeah. But I really think we've got to be able to talk about it. Yeah. And I think that is something.
Eyes were opened with that video in a way
100%.
That wouldn't have happened. 100%. And that's why it had to be guilty.
Mm-hmm.
We all had eyes.
Oh,
you know,
and for our community. I mean, our community has been tense and for a long time. And so I'm grateful for that, too.
Yes.
All right. So is there anything to Hollywood speak?
Well, listen, I feel bad for Queen Elizabeth.
Oh, no kidding. Another one died.
Double heartbreak on the day she buries her husband, her dear, dear friend, who was her manager of the Royal Studs, which is not her hot guys in the, you know, Beaverhead has, but the other people, the horse people, he died. He was 86. Sir Michael Oswald, his wife was her mom's lady in waiting for like 30 years. They like grew up together.
Right.
She was, you know, just 95 and he was 86. So he accompanied her to made all the horse decisions. He died, which she loved.
He accompanied her, but let's just cut to the chase. He made all those decisions. And her horses were her passion.
And he accompanied her to races and which things they should buy. He was, anyway, he was 86, and they were just dear, a longtime friend of she and her husband. And he also had been close to the Queen Mother. So he's a longtime family friend.
Yeah.
So that happened.
And then she's going to turn 90.